Good evening, everyone, and welcome to eBible Fellowship's question and answer tonight. This evening, we're going to take a look at any questions or comments that anyone may have. And each person is invited to share whatever might be on your mind. And you're welcome to share in the following ways, or you can participate. If you're in Pal Talk, by raising your hand, and then once you're prompted by the admin, you can enter your question into the text, and the moderator will share it in this conference room. If you're listening through phone or Skype, you're welcome to hit *6 and then the number 1, and that will raise your hand and enter you into the queue to ask your question. And once you're called upon, you just can make your comment or ask your question. And I'll try to respond as much as possible by going to the Bible. And the Bible is the eternal Word of God. And it is the place where we can go that the only place that we can have confidence and trust and faith that this is truth. We cannot really have that confidence anywhere else in this world with anything else in a 100% wholehearted way, but only with the Bible can we be absolutely sure that we are hearing the truth. And the Bible has the truth. It is, the Bible says of itself, thy word is truth. Just as Jesus is said to be the way, the truth, and the life, because Jesus is the Word made flesh. And what's true of him is true of the Bible. And the Bible is truth in every area that we look. And so we search the Bible to find out what is truth concerning this verse or this topic or this idea. And that's what we've done for quite a while now concerning the timing of the end of the world. Now, a lot of people like to say that you're setting dates, and they scorn the idea that man can ever set a date and know that the future concerning Christ's return in the end of the world. And I agree. I agree completely that if man sets a date, that if man says Christ will come and the world will end, and it's from that man, if it's from an individual, then it's worthy to be scorned, because man doesn't know what's going to happen tomorrow. No man does. And of course, we don't know anything about the end of this world of ourselves. But the difference is that if we go to the Bible on this subject as well as any subject, and we follow God's methodology, and we search the Bible in order to discover truth concerning this subject, well, then if we come up with a date, then it's not coming from us, it's coming from the Bible. Well, someone might say, and you know, have a lot of weight behind saying it, Well, you did that with May 21 and October 21. And it's true that even when we go to the Bible and we search for the timing of the end and we follow God's methodology, that still we have to admit we have our limitations in being men. And yet God did reveal May 21 as Judgment Day, and that was correct. And that's so we do have in the proclamation of this date evidence that we were correct in foretelling, as God opened up the eyes of his people concerning this date and sharing this with the world. We were correct. We were incorrect concerning the exact nature of what would take place, but we were correct that that is the day of judgment. Judgment Day began. And we were also correct that there would be 5 months that would be God's punishment for sin. And yet at the same time, we did not understand everything perfectly concerning the 5 months. And now at this time, God is once again correcting us, and we're seeing that yes, the penalty for sin was to be a 5 months period of torment, and that's what God required as his judgment upon this world. However, the length of that 5 months, we've been corrected to see now is 147 days, not 153, as we had previously thought. But we're now following the biblical calendar, and we haven't pulled another date out of our hat, but it comes from the Bible. 2:17 identifies with May 21. 7:17 identifies with October 14th and October 15th, because at each of our days, we have two overlapping Hebrew or biblical days. And the Hebrew day begins in the evening. 7:17 or Tishri 17 began October 14th in the evening, and it continued into the next day of October 15th. What happens is, since most of the Hebrew day of Tishri 17 is October 15th, but a portion is on October 14th. And then from Tishri 17, that space of 147 days, we double it. And this is new information we're learning from the Bible now. We did not know before. And it's just impossible, really, for us to know these things in advance unless God opens up our eyes in advance to them. But we see that that God's way of teaching us some of these things is we experience a setback in our expectation. For instance, we reach October 21 and apparently nothing happens, and we go beyond that particular date. And then we're wondering, well, what happened? Judgment Day was supposed to be 5 months. And for a while, we study and pray and go to God asking that question, Lord, what has happened? What have you done? And then if it's God's good pleasure, he can open up our understanding, and we learn an extra bit of the overall timeline. And that's what's happened now. Now we see that there's a second and final 5 month stage, because it's God's plan to double the torment, to double the destruction, to double the penalty for sin. after we make that first correction, and to Tishri 17 of 147 days, and we double the number of days, 147, it arrives on Adar 15. And Adar 15 is the last day of the Feast of Purim, the day that has entered into our focus and that the Bible has directed us to, because we learned earlier in the book of Esther that all the major events that took place on the 17th day of the second month within a timeline, that leads to the Feast of Purim and a day that was established to be a day of destruction for the Jews, but is turned to be a day of destruction for the enemies of the Jews. And that's a very good way of describing Judgment Day, a day in which, well, initially all of the elect, we were subject to wrath even as others. That is, we were going to die on that day, just as anyone else, because of our sin. But God turns it when he saves us, and it's only the enemies of God, the enemies of his kingdom, all the unsaved, that die, and not one of his elect people die. And, and that's just exactly what the Feast of Purim pictures. Now, we find two major tie-ins with the Feast of Purim that now tie into May 21 and a five-month space from that point, and then doubled, and it lands on the Feast of Purim. And so this connects all the dots. We have a complete spiritual chronology now within the book of Esther. For a while, we saw how Esther laid out in an amazing fashion a chronology spiritually that followed Israel, the church age, the end of the church age, the promotion of Satan during the Great Tribulation, even the proclamation of the gospel going out into the world, into all the world, in which many became broken and saved. And then Judgment Day, May 21, the book of Esther spends a long period of time. It devotes over at least three chapters to that single day. But what was conspicuous by its absence was a five-month mark in that chronology. We didn't see it. From the 17th day of the second month, when Haman was humiliated and then destroyed, and Mordecai was exalted and given the house of Haman, we saw posts go out into all the provinces, but nothing that related to the 5 months. However, 10 months later, from the 17th day of the second month until Adar 15, and I say 10 months, even though normally we would think Adar 17, and that's how it would look in our calendar, but I'm saying that because of the space of days. It's 294 in the book of Esther, just as it's 294 in our day, which is a doubled 5 months period. So God didn't focus on the single 5 months, but he does have the length of time of Judgment Day in the book of Esther, in the doubling of the 5 months, a space of 10 months. And so we have a complete spiritual chronology now that covers the entire 10-month period since the 17th day of the second month, or since May 21, all the way to Judgment Day. And, you know, just think what had to happen in order for us to see this double period of 5 months. You know, first of all, we had to have an additional date that God gave back in the book of Genesis in chapter 8. Now, Genesis 7, God's the one who told us so plainly that he shut the door on the 17th day of the second month. And that we know how significant that was. That was the underlying day of May 21 in the Hebrew calendar. And it's also God who gives further the date. He identifies 150 days later, 5 months, as the 17th day in the seventh month. So that was necessary for God to give that date. If he didn't give us that date, then none of this would work out. And so we're following a second date. We're being more biblical. We're following more closely the flood account by going to the Tishri 17 as the space of, as the complete end of the 5 month period. And then God had to instill in his word a law. He had to place in his word, because he can't do something without the law of God supporting it. You know, he's bound by his law. He cannot do something more than his law requires. And within the law of God, we find in Exodus 22, and let me read these. It says three times it has this law concerning doubling the punishment. In Exodus 22, verse 4, if the theft be certainly found in his hand alive, whether it be ox or ass or sheep, he shall restore double. Verse 7, if the thief be found, let him pay double. Verse 9, the last part of the verse, and whom the judges shall condemn, he shall pay double unto his neighbor. Now, God is the one who put those laws in the Bible. It doesn't say it for every sin. We don't read about double payment everywhere, but God put it on the books. He did place a law in the Bible concerning double restitution, double payment. Someone pointed out today that he drove by a construction zone, and there was a sign that said, all fines are doubled in this area. And that's the good pleasure of the authorities. They make the law, and normally if they say the penalty for speeding is so much, well, that's what the penalty is. But if they choose that in a particular area they want to be more safety conscious, like in a construction zone, they can double it. And what does it do? Well, it makes the one who's speeding through there think a little bit more. Does he want a double fine? Does he want double punishment? And God takes this principle and he applies it to Babylon in Revelation chapter 18. And isn't it interesting that it's Babylon that we read of a few times in the Bible? Babylon is fallen, is fallen. A double statement concerning Babylon. I can't think of other nations that are also very wicked in which God doubles it, like Egypt. I don't think we read Egypt is fallen, or Assyria is fallen or fallen. is fallen. But Babylon, a few times, God doubles it. And he tells us that Babylon is fallen. When did Babylon fall? Historically, after 70 years in 539 BC, when the Medes and the Persians took the kingdom. And what did that 70-year picture or that 70-year historical space, that was an actual 70-year period, but it was also a historical parable picturing the length of the Great Tribulation and the fall of Babylon, that last day when the king of Babylon is slain, and he's slain in a banquet of wine, just as Haman is slain at a banquet of wine, or taken from there and hung, that end of the 70 years and the end of pictures, the end of the Great Tribulation, which took place on May 21. So that's the day that's in view when the Bible says Babylon is fallen, and doubles it. So we're not too surprised when we read in Revelation 18, verse 6. Let me start in verse 5. For her sins have reached unto heaven, and God has remembered her iniquities. Reward her even as she rewarded you, and double unto her double according to her works. In the cup which she has filled, fill to her double. And the cup is the cup of God's wrath. It's and the end of the Great Tribulation, May 21, was Judgment Day. It was the end of the 23-year Great Tribulation, the time historically that the fall of Babylon pictured, and the doubling of even the statement, Babylon is fallen, and then give her the cup double. And in verse 7 of Revelation 18, how much she has glorified herself and lived deliciously, so much torment and sorrow give her, for she saith in her heart, I sit a queen and am no widow, and shall see no sorrow. And that is a reference to the penalty, torment, 5 months of torment. And that is the cup that is given to Babylon. Revelation 14 also speaks in verse 8 and says, Babylon is fallen. And then it speaks of the cup of the wrath of God. And let me just read what it says there in verse 10. The same shall drink of the wine of the wrath of God, which is poured out without mixture into the cup of his indignation. And he shall be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy messengers and in the presence of the Lamb. And we have seen, we can show how that identifies with the five-month period. Torment that's referred to in Revelation 9. 5 months of torment is doubled. So now we just have to wonder, because we want to know. We want to know the truth. We want to know what is God saying. And we go to Book of Esther. We had many questions, and God puts his finger on the 17th day of the second month in the midst of a timeline that leads to a day of destruction, and he shows us how that identifies with a spiritual judgment day on May 21. Then he is now teaching us, go back to Genesis. And once you do that and you follow more closely the next date of 717, Tishri 17, then you'll see that's the space of 5 months, and you double it, and it comes out to the last day of the Feast of Purim. And you know, who is it? Who is it that says in the Bible about Babylon in the context of the fall of Babylon, which relates again to May 21, double unto her, double the cup? And then he goes on to say, give her so much torment. I just don't know how anyone can put these things together. I mean, you could try for 1,000 years, pick a couple of dates, just pick any dates you like, and go to the Bible and try to prove these types of things about them, and you'll never be able to do it. You'll never be able to do it. I just don't know anyone who has that sort of ability and to make the Bible fit in this way. Well, okay, at this time we're going to open up the room, and let's go to the first person who has a question. Welcome to eBible Question and Answer.
Our first question from Pal Talk tonight comes from Examiner KC. Do you feel or think that the judgment / wrath or rapture will happen to everyone at the same time? Or will it be like in Esther where it happens to some of the providences before it begins and ends in Shushan? Is there evidence or additional information in Esther or anywhere else in the Bible that would illustrate how it might happen throughout the world, how it might all happen throughout the world?
Well, I think that Esther is teaching us that the experience of the Feast of Purim can be different depending on your location. And those in Shushan, they were more involved in the destruction of their enemies, because they did it 2 days, but that wasn't true of the rest of the provinces. Also, we would say that those in the other provinces, they experienced more of the rest because they destroyed their enemies on the 13th and rested on the 14th. But at the same time, the 15th became a day of rest. So what this does is it allows God to bring a worldwide simultaneous judgment or completion of the judgment. And since everyone is on the feast, it doesn't particularly matter at what point, because we could have individuals experience different or varying degrees of this feast in the world, while others experience more, some less, and yet all are on the feast. And I think that remains intact. Well, thank you for that question. And let's go to the next person. Welcome to our question and answer time tonight.
Could we look at Isaiah chapter 4, verse 4?
Isaiah 4, verse 4?
Yes.
Okay, let's see. When the Lord shall have washed away the filth of the daughters of Zion, and shall have purged the blood of Jerusalem from the midst thereof by the spirit of judgment and by the spirit of burning.
That phrase, you know, purged by the spirit of burning, it just made me think of the verses that says, you know, he's going to destroy the world with fire and burning. And when I came across this one, I'm starting to wonder now if the last days, the world is somehow the spirit of burning is not going to be destroyed in a physical way. Do you see what I'm saying?
Well, we're actually in the day of judgment now, and God is looking or viewing this period of time as a fire. 1 Corinthians 3 tells us, and this is the fiery trial, but at the end of this period of time, there will be an actual fiery destruction and the end of this world and then the recreation of new heaven and new earth. It says in 1 Corinthians 3:11, for other foundation can no man lay than that is laid, which is Jesus Christ. Now, if any man build upon this foundation gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, stubble, and the silver, the gold, silver, precious stones are typifying the believers, they would endure a fire, but the wood, hay, stubble would be burned up in a fire. And it says in verse 13, every man's work shall be made manifest for the day, and we are in judgment day. So we could say we are in the day of judgment, even though the actual length appears to be about 10 months. Yet, yet God views it all as a single day of judgment. And so it says, every man's work shall be made manifest, for the day shall declare it, because it shall be revealed by fire, and the fire shall try every man's work of what sort it is. You know, the word manifest, we became familiar with that word when Jesus, we learn, entered into the world to make manifest what he had done from the foundation of the world in dying for the sins of his people and rising again before the world even began. And so the Bible says, excuse me, that light, no, how's that verse go? Whatsoever does make manifest is light. And Christ came as the light of the world to shine the light on the work that had already been done before the foundation of the world, which we otherwise would have no knowledge of. And so now we have a great many professed Christians, and we know those in the churches, they failed the test of the Great Tribulation. When God commanded them to come out and they refused, they were all bundled as tares for the burning. And Judgment Day, May 21, began the fire. And at that point, tragically, what was true in the church, where there would be no more salvation, became true in all the world. And for all intents and purposes, the very beginning of this judgment burned them up, because now they had no escape. And yet there were many now outside the church, many that professed to be Christian. And so they also had to be tried by fire, and it had to become evident. You know, the Bible speaks of a necessity. We have a need of patience. After you have done the will of God, you have a need or a necessity of patience. Why do we have a need of patience? Does that just mean we have a need to wait? Well, that's a part of it, but God helps us to understand why it's a necessity. In James 1, verse 3, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. But let patience have her perfect work, that ye may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. And so God set up this whole program of Judgment Day as a huge testing program, in order to bring the fire, spiritual fire, upon the profession of faith of all those basically outside the church, because all within the church have already been burned up in the fire as tares. But since many outside the church, they were obedient on that level to not be in the church on that last day, God designed in his wisdom a testing program. Number one, it would begin by bringing a spiritual judgment on May 21. And how can you see a spiritual thing? Only through faith. Now, if any who, for whatever reason, happen to be outside the church and And they heard talk of a spiritual judgment, especially as the physical aspect of the judgment was being emphasized to some degree. Well, you know, we have firsthand experience what happens. People don't buy it. They don't buy it. They didn't see it. They don't buy it. And that's the exact same thing. That's the exact same test that the church has failed. When they were told, well, you know, the church age is over and the spirit of Christ has left and the spirit of Satan has entered in, they didn't see it and they didn't buy it in the churches. It's very much parallel when those outside of the churches now are facing a similar test. It's a spiritual judgment. Do you believe God? Many did not, but some continued even further along, and I'll wait, there's another date. And God, once again, now we're finding out, had a plan all along to double it. And even if we had the correct space of 5 months of 147 days, we would have once again reached that point and seemingly nothing happened. And once again, it's a severe test is what it is. And these things are seen in the Bible, and we see things in the Bible through faith with spiritual eyes. And now again, you know, what is the test? Well, is it to fail the test to be confused? No. Is it to fail the test to not know what's going on or what the Bible's teaching and to be in a position of to lack understanding greatly? No, that's not failing the test. But when all of a sudden now you hear people joining forces basically and mimicking almost word for word exactly what the churches were saying prior to May 21, no man knows a day or hour, or going back to the world, or some going back to the church itself. And these are failures of the test. And it is, what is happening is, it is becoming manifest. The fire of this harsh and difficult period of time is making manifest, and it is revealing and trying every man's work of what sort it is. Just as God brought the fire to the church, he has developed, again, in his wisdom, this particular fire for all those outside the church. And how can someone pass the test? They can be confused and not have a clue. I just don't know what's going on. But what God's people do, and this is why God emphasizes patience. He says, in your patience possess ye your souls. Patience is waiting on the Lord, waiting for more information, if it's God's good pleasure to open up to show us what he's doing. Because, look, we trusted the Bible. All this came from the Bible when we learned about May 21 and shared it with the world. God had to do it. He used the faithful ministry of family radio that he had been using for so many decades. He proclaimed this message to all the world. And God's people just knew. I don't know what's going on, but I know God is doing something. And I just have to wait without dumping things we've learned from the Bible. Solid things like a wise man's heart discerneth time and judgment, and solid things like the church age is over, and the timeline that's derived right from the scriptures, from the genealogies. We don't dump that at God's people. Wait on the Lord. And then as they have, we have begun to continue to study the Bible and learn some things, and now we can see an outline, and we can see very clearly what God has done. But thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
Okay, thank you for your question. Let's go to the next person. Welcome to eBibles Question and Answer.
Our next question comes from Ezekiel Carvalho on PalTalk. He says, hi, Chris. You mentioned on Sunday that with regards to what happened on the 17th day of the seventh month, it was spiritual in nature. Could the spiritual event which took place on the 17th day of the seventh month be the doubling of the 147 days? What was this spiritual event? If that may not be it, then what was the spiritual event which took place on October 15th of 2011?
Well, by the way, I'm working right now with someone with a spreadsheet to lay out 147 days and the doubling of it. And we hope to have this soon, and that time we'll post in the eBible Facebook group and hopefully get it up on the website. That should help people see this. We may have to start counting with May 21, or the 17th day of the second month. May 21, again, the Hebrew day has two dates. Our Gregorian date of May 21 has two Hebrew calendar dates, the 17th day of the second month, and then in the evening, the 18th day. And so May 21 concluded the Great Tribulation, and it also began the 5 months. And just like when we look historically, It was on that day that Noah and his family were in the ark, and the door was shut, and the rain began. So it was a combination of God's people getting in, and then the closure and the shutting of the door, so no one else could get in. And so if we start on May 21 and we go to October 14th. That's another way of saying is counting inclusively, including May 21. We come to October 14th, and in the evening, Tishri 17 begins. And then if we start counting again October 15th, which is the larger portion of Tishri 17, that's Tishri 17 and 18, we go 147 days, and it falls on Adar 15. You know, there's different ways of counting, and we can see that God has done this, and he has doubled this span of 147. Now, your question is, what happened after 5 months? And the answer is, same thing that happened on May 21. It was as though the cup was drunk, dry. We could say 5 months of torment, and then the law of God said, double it. And that's the spiritual judgment of that day, was an extension of an additional 5 months. We're matching the first 147 days until the Feast of Purim. And so I would say that is the spiritual significance of the 5 month mark, and really it's brilliant of God to work it out this way, and to bring people with an expectation, and on one hand we're you know, we're thinking, oh, it's been so severe a test, and it has. But that's the whole point. It's a fire. It's a fire that is refining gold and silver, and therefore it must be hot, because God is ready to bring the purified gold and silver into the final resting place, or in his people into the kingdom of heaven. And yet, you know, it's just been a fact that all through history, there has been those that have, for whatever reason, have clung to at least a profession of the true gospel. It was true in the church, and it's been true out of the church. And it would be unlike God, completely out of character, to just because some people identified with him and with the proclamation of his warning of judgment, that he just takes them in. And yet, on the other hand, what if he didn't? What if he didn't? What if May 21 was the end of all things, and there were all sorts of people that were following along and in agreement on every point, and many of them were left behind? You know, God determined, just like he did for the church, that I'll give them a testing period. I gave the church a testing program. I warned them again and again, will they hearken to me? If they don't hearken, well, then it'll become evident. They're only my people in name only. And likewise, now a testing program for a great multitude. It's not just us that carry the message, but it's those that did become saved themselves, and they heard it. And we don't know what God's doing with them all over the earth, and they're all outside the church. So he's used this period of time, 10 months, to try these individuals that are his people, and many that perhaps also heard outside the church, and yet they never truly became saved. But thank you for that question, and let's go to the next person. Welcome to our question and answer period tonight.
You did say that the experience of Purim will be experienced differently by different people in different sections. Is there something we can prepare of how we should be thinking or approaching it? For example, should we think of the rest, or should we think of the fulfillment of the fulfillment of our inheritance?
Well, you know, we could think of all that because Purim for the Jews historically was nothing but good news. When they heard that day was turned for them, there was joy and gladness and great comfort given them in all the provinces amongst all the Jews. And so it's not a day that the elect looks dreadfully towards, but it's a day of great hope and expectation, and yes, of entering into the eternal rest where we receive our inheritance by lot. And that's a good way of looking at it. And what I meant was, when we experience different things, I meant that, for instance, say New Zealand enters into a DAR 15, but other nations maybe are still on a DAR 14, and God could complete it then, if he wanted to. So we're all on Purim, and a DAR 14 was a day of rest for 126 provinces, but it wasn't in Shushan. So that's the point.
Thanks for the beautiful answer.
Okay. Okay, thank you for your question. And let's go to the next person. Please go ahead with your call.
Good evening. In Revelation 14, God thrusts his sickle into the earth twice, once in verse 16 without much explanation, and again a final time in verse 19. That's twice. Is this a good picture of doubling the judgment spiritually?
Well, you know, I've been looking at that too, and I've thought the same thing. But right now, I think it's something to continue to look at. The language there is, let me read what you're referring to. In Revelation 14 and verse 14, I looked and behold a white cloud. And upon the cloud, one sat like unto the Son of Man, having on his head a golden crown, and in his hand a sharp sickle. Now, in both these instances, there'll be a sickle. And another angel came out of the temple, crying with a loud voice to him that sat on the cloud, thrust in thy sickle and reap, for the time is come for thee to reap, for the harvest of the earth is ripe. The word ripe is translated as dry or wither in other places. And so it's not talking about, you know, good ripe fruit, but of a harvest that is rotten. It's dry and withered. And he that sat on the cloud thrust in his sickle on the earth, and the earth was reaped. Now that's the first time. And then verse 17, another angel came out of the temple, which is in heaven, he also having a sharp sickle. And another angel came out from the altar, which had power over fire, and cried with a loud cry to him that had the sharp sickle, saying, thrust in thy sharp sickle, and gather the clusters of the vine of the earth, for her grapes are fully ripe. Now, I don't have notes on this, but I remember Mr. Camping talking about that. And again, it has to do with judgment. This is not a positive thing. And the angel thrust in his sickle into the earth and gathered the vine of the earth and cast it into the great wine press of the wrath of God. And earlier in Revelation 14, we read of the same shall drink of the wine of the wrath of God, which is poured out without mixture into the cup of his indignation. And then it mentions torment. So I think that this may identify with a double period of destruction or judgment, excuse me, a double period of 5 months. But some of the language is slightly different. One place it says the harvest of the earth is ripe. The other, it says the clusters of the vine of the earth, for her grapes are fully ripe. And yet we do have the action of the Lord Jesus thrusting in a sickle twice and bringing judgment twice. So it really is something to continue to study.
Thank you.
All right, thank you for bringing up these verses. And let's go to the next person. Welcome to our time of question and answer.
Hey, Chris. Before May 21, we had the infallible proof, 722,500 days. And it was noted that, if I remember correctly, that it was noted that it was the factors were doubled and, you know, shortly going to come to pass. Is it possible that that same principle in Genesis applies to this judgment, almost doubling the judgment?
Yeah, I think it does. You're referring to, was it April 1st, 33 AD, when Jesus was on the cross,
right,
through May 21 of 2011. If you count the space of days, it's 722,500, and that breaks down to 5 times 10 times 17 times 5 times 10 times 17. And 5 has to do with the atonement, and that's when it began, when Christ was in a tableau making the atonement, and then the number 10, the completion of what's in view, and 17, the completion of the atoning work of Christ, bringing all of the elect into a saving condition ready for heaven, number 17, and that was accomplished by May 21, and so it was doubled, and now we find then began on that very day that particular proof ended. We began a period of 147 days, and then a doubling of 147 days, and 147 breaks down to 3 times 7 times 7, and then the second period is 3 times 7 times 7. Now, it's different in the when the doubling of the 722,500, it was a multiplication. You know, the multiplication kept going.
Right.
5 times 10 times 17 times 5 times 10. That's not the case here.
Right.
It's 3 times 7 times 7 plus 3 times 7 times 7. But I think the principle is the same. And in this case, we can see that when, as Joseph pointed out, he said the dream is one. And it is doubled because it will shortly come to pass. and in that instance, the dream was doubled, but it pointed to one event. And the doubling of the dream, it gave indication that this would happen right away. And not too long after that, the 7 years of plenty began, followed by 7 years of famine. And now we have learned that the judgment of 5 months has been doubled, and the end of that five doubling, that the end of 10 months, will take place in just a few weeks. So that is very short. And I think that principle applies, that it will shortly come to pass.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Well, thank you. We start a couple minutes after 10, so we still have a couple minutes. Let's go to one more caller tonight. Welcome to eBible Fellowship's question and answer. Please go ahead with your call.
Yeah, Chris. I was just noticing that basically, I looked at a couple of spreadsheets somebody else did, and I noticed on the spreadsheet I had that the 147 days lined up perfectly with our Gregorian calendar and whatnot. On somebody else's spreadsheet, I noticed none of it seemed to line up, and I believe that someone used a Julian calendar to line up the first day of Nisan, but then we start talking. You guys start talking about some other things where, if we're saying that March 15th, or not March 15th, but March 7th, 8th, and 9th is supposed to line up with the Feast of Purim, which is 12 through 15. What calendar are we using at this point? Because if you run the Hebrew calendar with it, it doesn't seem like anything really lines up really well. How do you explain that?
Excuse me. Well, you know, we're correcting the 5 months, we're going back to the Hebrew calendar, and we're following the second date given in the flood account in the book of Genesis. So the space of days there is out of our control. In the Hebrew calendar, that can change from year to year. And it so happens that at this particular point, that the 17th day of the second month through the 17th day of the seventh month is 147 days. in the Hebrew calendar and in our Gregorian calendar. I don't know about the Julian, and that's not important. But then when we double the 147, it goes to the last day of Purim, March 9th, which is Adar 15. And that works out in the Hebrew calendar, and it works out in our Gregorian calendar. But you know, there are different ways of counting. You can count inclusively, or you can not. And depending on how you count, can change the total. So you could see someone and it just doesn't work out. But if we start counting day one, May 21, and go 147 days, and I, you know, this was helpful for me. I just hand drew a calendar with all the months. It's leading up to October, and then I counted them one by one, and I checked it out, various dates with the Hebrew calendar to see how they fell. And so the total is accurate. It's 147. If you start counting with May 21, that is May 21 is day one. And for May of 2011, then you would get 11 days total rather than 10 if you don't start counting on May 21. So if you count May 21, and we should because that's the 17th day of the second month, then you come to October 14th, and in the evening, October 14th is Tishri 16, but in the evening it turns to Tishri 17. So we've reached the date given in Genesis, and that's 147, and then on October 15th, that's Tishri 17 and Tishri 18. So once again, we have a starting point that is in line with the date given in Genesis, and we count 147, and it comes to Adar 15, where March 9th.
So we're throwing out completely October 21st as a date, but we're actually going to go back to October 15th and running that. So really, if I'm understanding this completely correctly, that October 21st wasn't really a date for us. It was just something that was actually 5 months from within our understanding of 153 days.
Right. We were thinking that was the day because it was the last day of Tabernacles. And why was that supposed to be the day? Because that's the day that was the last day, resurrection, the end of all things. And that phrase, last day, is used 8 times. And so it was very attractive and very appealing to say, oh, that's the day. But it was not the last day. It was not the day of the resurrection. It was not the end of the world. And therefore, that assumption was wrong. And it, you know, if we went back and we followed Genesis and nothing came of it, I wouldn't say that we had any basis for making a change. But when we go back and then we learn the language of doubling torment is in the Bible, and it so happens that when we do double it, it lands on the last day of Purim, the feast that's come so much into view, then I think it's pretty clear that this is all legitimate. It's biblical. We're now sticking with 2 dates from the Genesis account, and once we do, then we have a lot of verses. All of Revelation 9 now makes sense. The whole chapter. And after October 21, it just ceased to make sense. And people were rightly asking, well, what happens now? There was 5 months of torment, and October 21 should have been the end, and we've passed it. Is there still torment? Are men still seeking to die and not able to find it? And all those things are answered because now we see what was true of the 5 months is true of 10 months. And all the verses now have explanation. So, you know, that's how we can know we're on the right track. We didn't pull Tishri 17 out of a hat. It came from Genesis. In the very same account, if we just pulled it out of the blue somewhere, you know, some obscure timeline somewhere and said, hey, what if we do this? Then it wouldn't be legitimate. But we're going to the very account itself, and it's there. And then once we do it, we find doubling it just so happens. And what are the odds of that? It just so happens to land on Purim. We didn't come up with Revelation 18:6 either, where God stresses three times in one verse, double unto her, double. And then the next verse, he says, give her so much torment. It really is quite clear, I think, what God has done.
Well, yeah, I sent you that spreadsheet not too long ago, lining up a piece of Purim to that calendar in Esther with our own calendar, and what you're seeing is absolutely correct. I mean, if you take away the top from starting at 217 and you take out the, you know, all the lines and you count along the side of the lines and rows, I should say, you come right to 3-9 of our calendar, which is 294 days, which is the Feast of Purim is 215. I mean, it all lines up, and I just didn't understand why anybody would want to use a Julian calendar because it never seemed to line up with anything, and it looks like it's conclusive, 217 to 1215 of the East of Esther is exactly 294 days. But anyway, thank you for your answer, and good work out there.
Thank you for your question and your comments, and I would like to thank everyone for sharing your questions tonight and your comments, and of course, especially the Bible verses we had an opportunity to read and to consider. Lord willing, we'll be back again tomorrow night, Friday, February 3rd at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, once again in this room. And please join us again. And but for now, I'm going to say good night, and may the Lord grant us his wisdom.